You know what? I am cutting back. That matching end table from Pottery Barn, you know, that we really, really want, but that just has to wait. No more secretly ordering musical instruments without telling my wife. Honey, I swear that Glockenspiel that came in the mail the other day, that is it, I promise, for a while. And now I've got a kid, and he's gonna need a bedroom at some point, and so I better start figuring out how to make that happen. Anyway, what I'm saying is I am all about tonight's Story Slam theme, tightening the belt. Good evening, and welcome to another one of our beloved and often unpredictable in-the-loop story slams. I'm Jeff Horwich, here with a great audience at the Bedlam Theater in Minneapolis. Let them hear you, audience. And we've had storytellers signing up for the last hour or so. It is, as I stand on this stage at this moment, the summer of 2008, and conditions are tight. Economists tell us that when times are tough, one of the first expenses people cut back on is tickets for live storytelling events. That's true. It's one of the first indulgences to go, right along with lower back tattoos of Garrison Keillor. So I want to thank you all for coming out despite the difficult economy. Given that we are watching each dollar these days, it's worth noting the Bedlam will give you a small rebate on your ticket if you ride your bike or take the light rail to get here. Anybody do that tonight? That's not bad. I think the rest of us will come around as the months progress. Good for you guys. Consumers are nervous right now. The stock market has been slumping. Many of us know someone who's getting laid off or worried about it. And they tell us inflation is picking up, so our dollars aren't going as far. But let's be calm. We have been here before. And before we start the show, let's recall a few of our great American moments in belt tightening. 1929, the Great Depression, of course. Everybody's growing their own vegetables. No one even needs belts because people are dressing in potato sacks. American ingenuity on display. 1979, stagnant growth, lines around the corner for gas, rampant layoffs. Jimmy Carter tells us to carpool, take the bus, turn our thermostats down. Americans respond by laying off Jimmy Carter. And 2006 now, this one a little closer to home, right here in Minnesota. Cutbacks are coming at Northwest Airlines. So the company gives workers it's laying off a pamphlet. It's called Preparing for Financial Setback. And it's got a list of helpful tips in it, like seek out hand-me-down toys and clothes for your kids, and don't be shy about pulling items out of the trash. Tightening the belt can spawn lots of great material, which is why it's our storytelling theme for tonight. Of course, all we present to you is the phrase. Storytellers, you can take that any direction that you want. We got this microphone on stage waiting for you, and as always, we're going to pull names from our lovely hat until the clock runs out. Our band, The Smarts, is here to supply the musical color and to weigh in with their own take on the theme a little later in the show. I'll do that as well. So let's hike up our pants, everybody, and tighten those belts. It's time for another In the Loop Story Slam. And let's get our first storyteller to the stage. Gabe Heller, welcome back.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Now, people who've listened to the Story Slams before, Gabe, know you have sort of a recurring character, and we often talk about your state of employment.
Yeah.
Now that we're doing a show that's sort of tied to the economy, how are things going for you?
Well, I'm working in theater now, which doesn't pay as regularly as fixing furniture, but does pay a little. But I've got another roommate now as well who's helping me with the rent.
There's a totally unrelated thing that we gathered from you here on your way up to the stage. You once knocked out a black belt person.
Yes. He'd sort of been bugging people, so I told him, you know, stop bugging people. And he says, okay, you, back in the coat room. So I followed him back to the coat room, and I happened to have a deck of cards in my hand at the time. And he swung at me and missed, and I swung at him, and I hit him with the deck of cards. And he fell over and knocked his head on something and was unconscious for 30 seconds. And after that, he respected me. And to this day, he still tells the story of that jack that came right at his face and knocked him out. But
the one vulnerability of the ninja.
Yeah.
Okay.
They never expect a deck of cards.
All right, Gabe, well, knock us out with your story for us here tonight.
So if I could get some heartwarming music, I'd like you all to pretend for the first half that I'm some grandfatherly, trustworthy, deceased television personality like Charles Carrault. My grandmother grew up in the 30s. She used to play a game. She would go to the railroad tracks, picking up rocks as she went. When the trains came by, she would throw them at the men shoveling coal into the boiler. She was an excellent shot. The men would get so mad they'd throw back what they had to hand. Coal. She'd pick up the coal, take it home, and her family would use it to heat the house through the Illinois winters. Coal in your Christmas stocking seems like a punishment to us, but it kept my grandmother's toes warm. Back then, people waited in line for government bread. When my grandmother tightened her belt, it was to put pressure on her belly, to convince her stomach that it was full when she hadn't eaten that day. Recently, I found myself in a downscale employment agency, listening to an old black man speaking his mind. I need to go back down south, he said, if I can save up enough for the ticket. Down south, there are opportunities for folks like me. One guy wants me to be a partner in his business, if I can get down there. Up here, sure, y'all are mighty nice. Minnesota won't let you starve, but it won't let you get ahead either. Nope, it's not food we're worried about these days. Tightening our belt is a metaphor for tightening our purse strings, preparing to not get ahead for a very long time. But we do still tighten our belts during thin times, at least I do, when I get dressed, to make myself feel full. It's to keep myself from eating more than I should of the cheap, fattening, processed food that I can afford these days. I tighten it in fat times, too, to help me resist the temptations of the office break room. It's only in medium times I keep my belt loose. If only we could have more medium times, maybe my belts would last longer. Okay, so that's the end of the heartwarming part. Now, if we could get some science-y music, I'd like you all to imagine for the second half that I'm some trustworthy, deceased science commentator like Carl Sagan. So, when you play a trumpet correctly, you use very little air. Your lips set up a vibration in the air molecules that makes them pass through the trumpet more slowly. The process feeds back on itself, creating back pressure against your lips. And if you're Dizzy Gillespie, this makes your cheeks bulge out. The same thing happens on the highway in a traffic jam, like air molecules rushing in to fill a vacuum. Cars rush ahead whenever there's space, then bunch up together when there isn't, forming waves just like the sound waves inside a trumpet. And just like in a trumpet, this slows everything down. The difference is, people in cars can think. We don't have to rush in to fill the void. We could if we decided to all drive at precisely the same speed. Everyone would pick out the furthest car they could see and match its speed to the best of their ability. Overnight, there would be no more highway congestion. And so it is with the economy. When there's an opportunity to get ahead, a power vacuum, everyone rushes in to fill the void. But when there isn't enough to go around, we bunch up and the economy stalls. If only we could learn to move ahead in a more orderly fashion, we might never have to worry about tightening our belts again. Maybe the rest of the world could learn something from Minnesota. We may not be too quick to let you get ahead, but we won't let you starve either. Well, heck, a guy can dream, can't he? In the meantime, anyone know where I can get a good cheap belt?
Gabe Heller. A request for science-y music. That was well handled, fellas. That's right. The smarts back here, rolling with whatever our storytellers throw at them this evening.
There's a touch of fantasy in that one, too.
Jimmy used to play in a science-y band, actually.
He used to blind people with science. Thank you. Next, to have a go at our theme tonight, tightening the belt, Rick Bergsteiner. Rick, another new face to me. Welcome to the story.
It's a new face to me, too. I put it on just today, just for this show.
Well, it's a gorgeous one. Thanks for
picking it. Why, thank you very much.
Thanks for picking a nice one for us.
My mom would love you for that. She really
well, I love your mom. I don't.
Okay.
All right, let's move on. Along those lines, it says here, you once lost your pants for not wearing your belt.
And yeah, what happened was I was traveling to, I was going to Maine, and I ate a whole bunch of food, and I had unbuttoned the top button on my pants, you know, like people do.
Is this an adult story?
I was an adult,
okay,
yes.
That makes this quite interesting.
As much as I can be an adult, yes. So I had unbuttoned the button, and I had to go to the restroom. It was one of those things where there was three urinals, two guys on each one. I had to take the middle one. I didn't have a choice. So I go there, And I had read this article just a little bit before that, a men's article where they tell you, you know, how to do your hair and tie a tie and all the things you need to do to make women think you're the hottest guy in the world. And one of the things in there was that in the summertime, you shouldn't wear any underwear.
Okay.
So I didn't. Well, when you walk up to a urinal and you have the top button undone and you unzip,
no friction.
That's a good way to clear the whole house, man. Those two guys next to me, pew, they were gone.
What's so, this guy up to?
So that's it, yeah.
Well, we got a plenty colorful story. We haven't even gotten to your story yet, so let me let you move along. Okay. Rick Bergsteiner here on the Story Slam. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank everybody for coming to the actor support group tonight. It seems... My story relates to a while back when I was attempting to work as an actor, and my career wasn't doing great. I mean, I was working. I mean, I was really, really grumpy about it because at the time, I thought, you know, I was supposed to be rich and famous. I was supposed to be doing hair on Broadway, and I was kind of doing hair on Broadway in Knoxville, Tennessee. I was working at Earl's Hair Extraordinaire, shaving guys' heads. So anyway, I was that was my day job, and at night, I was working at this little theater company, children's theater, and I was doing The Velveteen Rabbit, and I was playing the rocking horse, and I was one of those grumpy actors who, you know, I was really full of myself. I was supposed to be an actor. I was supposed to be doing Shakespeare or something. I was supposed to be somebody. Why was I having to strut around on this stage wearing a horse costume? I'm doing the show. I'm not happy about it. Nobody is happy to be working with me in this show. And I had one of those moments in your life that sort of shakes things up for you. And what happened was, I'm doing the play, and the director comes up at one point and says, great show, everybody. After the show, can you come back out on the stage? Because we're going to have the audience come up and meet you. And I'm like, you know, this is like an actor's nightmare when you don't like what you're doing. It's like, oh, great. Oh, yeah, fine. Bring them up, fine. Well, I'm hanging around in the very back. All the other actors are sitting on the stage being cute and cuddly and everything. And I'm sitting in my horse costume thinking, man, wouldn't it be cool if I could, like, smoke a cigarette back here with this outfit on? And finally, I'm sitting there, standing there in the background. I'm just getting ready to leave the stage. And this woman comes running up to me. And she says, could you wait just 1 minute? Because my daughter would really like to meet you. I said, sure, whatever, sure. Well, she runs off, and she comes back, and really quick, what I discover is that her daughter is, in fact, blind. And I'm standing there, and she comes up to me, and she has this grin from ear to ear. It's just huge. And she's just completely filled with joy. And she comes up to me, and she's like, you're the rocking horse. And she wanted to feel my mane, and she wanted to rub her hands all over me. It was like something clicked on inside of me. And I said, you know what? It's not about the fame. It's not about the fortune. This is it. This is what it's about. It's about becoming real. See what The Velveteen Rabbit is all about, if you guys don't know. It's about what happens to old toys when new toys come along. Well, what happens to them is if somebody really loved the old toys, they become real. And they never go away from those people. They always remember the old toys. I'm sitting there, and this kid thinks, I'm real. I'm the rocking horse. I'm going to be the rocking horse for the rest of her life. It took a little blind girl to help a 30-something actor see that sometimes we just have to tighten the belt around our ego and just be real. Thanks.
Rick Bergsteiner with a great take on our theme. Thanks a lot, Rick. I'm Jeff Horwich, and we are at the Bedlam Theater in Minneapolis doing our Story Slam this evening. The theme is Tightening the Belt. Lucy Amundson, a Story Slam favorite, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks.
So you live in Duluth now.
Yes.
But you're down with us just by coincidence. You're flying out tomorrow. Where are you going?
Going back to Maine for my 20th class reunion.
Did you go to your 10? Was it 15?
No.
Wow. So you haven't seen a lot of these people in 20 years.
In 20 years.
Are you expecting a lot of this sort of measuring up of you know, who's done what with their lives and
and I'm already decided I'm going to be dead last. So all the pressure's off.
Well, now how in the world can that be? Why would you measure yourself dead last? You're a wonderful person and you've led a successful life near as we've lived it with you through Story Slam stories.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. If you listen to my Story Slam stories, it's been an adventure.
Well, we're in it with you and we're glad to hear one more. Thank you very much.
All right.
Lucy Amundson.
My husband had been working in Duluth for going on 7 months while I sat in Minneapolis with two kids, a big dog, and a house that would not sell. We started brainstorming ways to reunite our family and came up with the idea of renting a place, but it would have to be on the cheap. Jason started by looking at apartment units and duplexes in this college town and would call me from the car after. One place had such an extreme case of delayed maintenance, he said, it would stir up suicidal tendencies in you within a week. Things were looking grim. But through a series of odd coincidences, Jason was looking at an actual house within our budget. On the beachside of Park Point, no less. He called me while I was shopping at PetSmart with the children. It's a 3-bedroom rambler with first floor laundry, an attached garage, he said. It was like a housewife mating call. I was so excited I couldn't contain myself. The children, sensing my joyful discombobulation, were gesturing wildly, trying to goad me into purchasing a gerbil. At that moment, I was a vulnerable adult. But, Jason said over the phone, there's just a couple things. I held my breath. It's right next to a church because, well, it's actually the priest's house. I'm like, oh, that's fine, I said. And there's a life-size statue of Virgin Mary in the yard. I'm cool with Mary, I assured him. And the church itself has no running water, so on Sundays between 8:30 and 10, parishioners can use our bathroom. But that's it. I blinked as this settled on me and that the real estate collapse was about to drive me into a home with a semi-public restroom settled in. I'm okay with that, I heard myself say and made a note to get the really big container of Clorox wipes. Luckily, we found great tenants for our Minneapolis home, but they needed to move in before our rectory home would be ready. To make nearly 2 weeks of hotel living affordable, we took a less desirable room, an interior room with no windows at the hotel. It was a little like living in a casino where the lighting never changes and time doesn't actually exist. 10 a.m., 10 p.m., all the same. As I've gotten older, confined spaces bother me. I don't like parking ramps or concrete stairwells or, as it turned out, hotel rooms without windows. I think this fear started when I was hugely pregnant with my second child and was at the playground with my 2-year-old. Going down the tube slide with her, we got seriously stuck. After about 5 minutes of wiggling, the panic started to set in, and my only thought was that volunteer firefighters would have to come and cut us out with the jaws of life, and that I was going to be on the news of the weird. I did not want to be that mom. But truth be told, I didn't have it as bad as our dog. Instead of kenneling him, we thought we could save some cash. We would just stow him in the bachelor pad where my husband had been crashing while living in Duluth. Jason had the dog in there and went off to work. And hours later, Jason returns to silence. Now, our dog is an enthusiastic barker, and to hear nothing was not good. And Jason crept into the house calling his name, Scotty, Scotty, and he listened carefully and heard some faint whining. He thought it was coming from the kitchen, but no dog. Jason approached the counter and heard slight whimpering and realized that somehow this 70-pound Rottweiler had managed to get himself completely stuck inside the Lazy Susan cabinet. And after much doing, Jason spun the cabinet around and launched Scotty out, whom we now call Stucky. So while this year of belt tightening has been difficult, it has made us feel alive and vibrant and very grateful to be together, or at the very least, not stuck in a lazy Susan.
Lucy Amundson.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
You guys don't have to play that one for weddings very often, do you? It's not really, doesn't come naturally to you, but
I didn't have the chord changes.
Stretching outside of the usual repertoire.
That one started out with Amazing Grace, then we changed to that one. I don't know how that happened.
Let's turn now to our house band here, the Smarts. I'm going to take a run at our theme tonight, which is tightening the belt. And Joe Weissman usually write the lyrics for these things. And before our audience hears it, I just want to congratulate you on the ambition of this particular project.
It was ambitious, yes. I couldn't decide on the many concepts that were floating around in my head. So I said, let's do all of them. So in sort of a Jesus Christ Superstar fashion, we've made a rock opera, condensed it down into 5.5 minutes.
Imagine a Broadway musical about the economy. This would be the sort of opening montage, right?
This introduces all the characters and their stories and...
Quite a product, folks, so sit back and enjoy it. This is The Smarts with a suite for a crappy economy. Oh, yeah, your full title is not actually the word crappy, but
doesn't
we'll say
use the
that
word
for
crappy,
now.
Actually.
A little more alliteration involved. I'll let me get in place here, and we'll have at it.
Now we keep hearing times are tight. The experts all are on about. The advice they always give is see what you can do without. Da 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 da. But when you're laid off from your job and not sure where you're gonna sleep, and in a world where money's God, only talk like that is cheap. Da 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 da. Well, now I've thought about my life, and I've thought about it twice. The things that I could do without would be experts and advice. Da 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 da.
I'm riding my bike, I'm doing the right thing for my heart. I'm taking a hike. Sometimes you just need a push to start. I'm selling my car. In love with the happiness I found. I'm losing my job. I've also lost more than 15 pounds. If you have a choice between your groceries or your meds, then take the meds and buy some ramen. Buy some ramen.
Cut the gardeners down to Raul. I'm slumming, sold the sailboat, no one needs three. I'd keep it if it weren't for the slipsy. My Lexus is almost two. Love to trade it for something more new, but I'd better keep it just
just to be sure you see. I'm trying to live modestly. Eyes still open at 3. Wonders what's gonna be. She's racking her mind to see what she could have done differently to avoid her pink slip. But there wasn't a thing, 'cause some jerk who's making some seven figures figure. Oh, it was time to tighten the belt. I'm sorry. It's time to tighten the belt.
The Smarts! Gamely pulled off. Six songs in one. Look for the Crappy Economy musical coming to a theater near you. This is the Story Slam from In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. Our theme tonight, ripped from the headlines, you might say, tightening the belt. And taking our theme quite literally, stepping on stage with you now, is Dave Mondy. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
I'm good.
Got a note from you here that says, you wear a hipster belt. You're embarrassed, but doggone it, it's a good belt.
Well, it's a hipster belt, but it was actually bought from the Buckle at the Mall of America, which is sort of not hip. And
so how do you apply the word hipster here? What does that mean to you, to be a hipster?
It means having more artistic taste than the average person, but not actually being artistic and lording it over everyone.
Wow. Who can add to that? Nice job. Putting him on the spot as well. To take us a little bit deeper into our theme of tightening the belt, or maybe it's a story about his belt, we'll find out. Dave Mondy. Thanks.
All right, I want to start off by saying to everyone that I am an award-winning writer, memoirist, actor, an artiste, if you will, which of course means I make most of my money from waiting tables. Because here's the thing, 99% of people in the arts, I think, don't make their living at it, at least not right away. You're gonna be poor, you're gonna have to tighten the belt, and as an added bonus, it's gonna be incredibly humiliating. I find myself these days taking acting jobs that I previously, hilariously, thought I was too good for. My favorite example is on Halloween, where I and several other actors were hired by a casino to dress as the Wizard of Oz and hand out candy. 30 years old in a 50-pound Tin Man costume, distributing crackle bars to old ladies. They did love it. In fact, I think I got a little bit too into the Halloween well-wishing. I went up to this guy at the video poker, obviously very drunk, probably had lost a lot of money. And I said, you know, I like held it out and I was like, Happy Halloween, do you want some candy? And his head turned slow like a tank turret towards me. And he fixed me with this gaze and he said, you know, I ought to kick you in the balls. Couldn't disagree with him. But at least Dorothy was cute and I did get a number. But the humiliation, you know, I've dressed in all spandex, like full outfit for trade shows. I've been inside a giant M&M costume. I say all this to express how it was a couple months ago that I got that professional panic that artsy people sometimes get, okay? Everybody else has these extravagances that you don't have, like basic health care. And you think, what am I doing? I've got to get a real job, you know? So I decided this was my big plan. I was going to be an ad man, okay? I was going to write copy. And I actually got an interview at a very good firm downtown and got that crucial second interview, and that was going very well because, you know, like, I'm not some hired hack. I'm a real writer, artist down from the mountaintop deigning to... And on the last question about my creative process, I kept using the word scategorical, you know? And each time I used it, he smiled, you know, obviously pleased at my prodigious vocabulary. And it wasn't until afterwards talking to my friend who said, wait, what did you say? And I said, scategorical. And he said, no, you didn't. You've been saying, I realized I hadn't been saying scategorical, meaning random, but had been using the word scatological, which Webster's defines as having to do with or the study of feces. So you can imagine my horror thinking back to saying things like, well, you know, I like to start scatologically, just get it all out there. You know, working scatologically can be messy, but you can really find some good stuff in there. And I realized I was pretty much fated to wait tables until whenever it is that I make it, if that happens. And it kind of bummed me out. And then there was this night, about a month ago, I got off work late at night. I went to this hotel bar for a post-shift sort of cocktail. And the bartender, she recognized me from being in the industry, you know. It wasn't long before she had the concierge keys and was letting us into the 34th floor supposedly closed pool deck. And suddenly, you know, there I was sipping single malt scotch, sitting in a hot tub. And we were looking out over the Twin Cities as if we owned it. And I thought for a second, you know, maybe it's not like the 80s phrase. You know, maybe it's not whoever dies with the most toys wins. Maybe it's whoever dies with the most experiences.
That's Dave Mondy. Thank you, Dave. The Smarts, with the music in and around our stories tonight on the Story Slam. I'm Jeff Horwich. Now with me, Cindy Davis. Cindy, welcome to the Story Slam.
Thank you.
It says here you're a radio host as well, and you're sort of a part-time gig for you. What kind of show do you do?
Well, I volunteer at KAXE, Grand Rapids, Minnesota, public radio station, Green Cheese.
I have heard I've heard KAXE actually driving around up there. Yeah. It's a wonderful station.
Yeah, I don't get paid for this.
Definitely a treasure for that part of the state, the folks who get to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Now, how's the what's the economy like up in the northern part of the state?
Grim, I would say.
More grim than down here, you think?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, people are pulling together and helping out and stuff. I mean, like KAXE is volunteers go there and. You got to pay, what, $4 a gallon to drive 50 miles to do the radio for free. It's fun.
Costs you a little more to volunteer these days, that's for sure.
It sure does. Darn it.
Cindy Davis, very nice to meet you. Okay. Thanks for joining us on the Story Slam.
Thanks. This story is called An Embarrassment of Riches. I upgraded to first class on a flight to San Francisco. There is a separate, faster, friendlier line for first-class travelers, which I was glad about until things got stalled in the fast lane, and I was forced to stand next to some coach travelers. The demarcation between us was a large belt-like barrier, and the fact that I would be through security and aboard the plane sipping free cocktails, waiting for them to get their stuff together and get on board. So there I stood, peeved that I had to wait for two incredibly slow people ahead of me to stop fumbling with their stuff and move on. A mother and her inquisitive child stalled in their coach line, gave me the once-over. The little girl asked, "Mommy, why is that person standing there and not over here?" She was referring to me. In that kind, deliberate, lilting, this is a teaching moment voice, Mommy said, "Honey, that's a special line for people who get to sit in the front of the plane, where there's more room. Why can't we sit in the front of the airplane?" said the little girl, without any Nintendo DS to distract her from the world around her, especially me. They paid a lot of money for their ticket, and we didn't, she explained. I tried not to look directly at them, partly because I was embarrassed by my good fortune, and partly because they disgusted me as if I was an inanimate object. Which I was, because the darn first-class line wasn't moving. "Mommy, is that a boy or a girl?" "Turn around now," Mommy said. "It's not polite to stare at people." But the little girl seemed intent on figuring me out. Her perplexed expression was all about getting a handle on this class gender thing. So in my special, "Here, let me help you understand this voice," I said, "I'm a girl. And you know what? I'm the pilot of your airplane. That's why I'm in this line."
Cindy Davis, thanks a lot. You're listening to the Story Slam from In the Loop. Our theme this evening, Tightening the Belt. Joseph Scrimshaw, nice to see you back.
Nice to see you.
On an In the Loop-related product. We've had you on the show before, but
that's
never
right.
Out to a Story Slam. Heralded as a playwright and performer here in the Twin Cities. And it says here you've got a play that you wrote that is on stage now in Bulgaria.
That's right. I wrote a show called Adventures in Mating, where the audience gets to choose what happens to a couple on a blind date. And that's been playing all over the world. In Bulgaria is the most interesting place. They have some pronoun issues for male and female, so they actually have a choice at the beginning of the show where the audience gets to choose which pronoun is used.
Take me a little deeper into this. I'm not familiar with the Bulgarian language.
So different that you pronouns they can use that are more or less respectful.
Okay.
So you get to vote on how much respect is going to be used in the show.
how coarse people want the performance to be. And also says here you are a writer and performer, an artistic type, but you managed to purchase a house recently.
That's right.
Oh, congratulations. Now, how do you pull that off? Is it...
I just don't look too closely into it.
That's right.
Just hope it will work out.
And one of those magic mortgages we've been hearing so much
exactly.
about lately.
Exactly.
Well, I wish you good luck with that. Hang with it. The bubble's over, but you got in after it or something like
That's
that.
That's right.
So you're good to go.
Pop the bubble.
Joseph Scrimshaw, we're glad to have you on the Story Slam. Tightening the Belt is the theme. Take it away.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have something shocking to tell you. I am overweight, and it is all because of Batman. For my entire childhood, I was exceedingly thin. I described myself as svelte. Other children on the playground described me as a French fry, a human stick, and that geek we're going to beat up later after we're winded from beating up larger, more challenging geeks. I never wanted to be thin. I wanted to be muscular like Batman. It was a huge day in my life when I realized that Batman did not have superpowers. He just works out a lot and dresses up like an animal. Awesome, my brother and I thought. We can do that too. Of course, we'll deal with that working out and becoming in great physical condition thing when we grow up. Right now, the main question is, what animal can we dress up like to strike fear in the hearts of criminals everywhere? The answer was clear. Bears. We even designed the costumes. We were going to look like two giant Kevlar-coated teddy bears, which may have inspired not fear, but laughter in the hearts of criminals. But they wouldn't be laughing when we shot them with our honey guns. That's right. We were going to be armed with guns that shot sweet bursts of sticky honey to slow down our foes so we could just waddle over and slap them like salmons out of a river. And while I must admit that as an adult, I don't feel that same burning desire to dress up as a bear, I wouldn't mind being in good shape. So how does Batman do it? How does he tighten his utility belt? Batman has an exercise regimen that works great in comics and movies, but not so well in real life. It's called the exercise montage. Every time I start lifting weights, it's rewarding for a few seconds, but then I expect some music to kick in. Maybe from the 80s. And I jump from scene to scene. I'm lifting weights. I'm running long distances. I'm learning jujitsu in the mountains of Tibet. Unfortunately, my real-life workouts are much closer to a cut-to sentence. Like I'll say, I'm going to go to the gym tonight and work out. And then there's a record scratch sound effect. And the scene will suddenly jump to me watching TV with a half-empty whiskey bottle surrounded by the sad tinfoil remains of one too many burritos from Chipotle. So what does Batman have that I don't? Sadly, he has a better relationship with reality. Batman accepts that there is no secret trick to getting in better shape. It's just a lot of hard work. I simply have to force myself to stop treating my life like a movie and work through all those boring moments of tedious reality. And I think I can do it. And what's more, now you people will know if I succeed. Because if I ever get in as good of physical shape as Batman, I will dress up as a bear and start fighting crime. So the next time you see a dark, avenging teddy bear leaping across the rooftops of Minneapolis, you will know that I finally have a good grasp on reality.
Thanks a lot, Joseph Scribshaw. Somewhere in their memory banks lurked a version of Batman, vaguely like the original. This is the In the Loop Story Slam. I'm Jeff Horwich. Our topic tonight is tightening the belt. Now, of all the shows that we've done and all the songs that the band and I have done together, there's only one that has actually never been on the radio. A little over a year ago, we took this whole shoot and match, the band, me, my producers, the engineers, down to the Dorothy Day Center, which is a homeless shelter in downtown St. Paul, and also soon to become ground zero for the Republican National Convention. That'll be interesting. We created some great live music on that show with two residents of the place, Tony and Dusty. We also recorded one more tune with our audience there, whoever happened to be at Dorothy Day in the dining room that afternoon when we recorded it. But when we edited the show down, there just wasn't quite room for it. That was a song that I wrote after I spent a night in the place, just kind of talking to people and experiencing it. And when I left, I took some of the stories that I had heard and put a tune together, much of it, you know, word for word, stories and experiences that I'd heard from people while I was there. So given our theme tonight, I thought we'd finally give that tune an airing. It's called That I Rise. Disability office, 'cause you know I hurt my back. Woman looks at me, taps her pen. 10 more months, you'll be 55, she says. Why don't you stay at the shelter now and come back and see me then? I looked across the desk and said, it's real simple, lady. Give up your credit cards and checks. Put on some junky clothes like you're working in the yard. Come on down and see what happens to you next. I used to be so easygoing, so quick to joke and crack a grin. Now the slightest little thing can set me off. Don't think I'll be myself again.
Colorado. With 43 bucks, I headed out of town. Picked St. Paul, cause it had saint in the name. I thought that might mean the good luck to try to turn my life around. Someone stole my wallet on the second day I got here. No job, no money, no ID. I got stuck and now a year gone by somehow. It tries to take the spirit out of me. I've been tricked out of my money. I got ripped off working for the county fair. Through my cousin I could drive a forklift in Detroit if I just had the cash to get me there. Get me there. God says, hold your tongue and turn the other cheek. In here, that's the hardest thing to do. So mind your business, go on, try to get some sleep. Hope that no one tries to bother you. It's my pride that keeps me here. I got friends and family who could help. I'd never hear the end of what they'd done for me. You know, this time I got to help myself. And as I'm looking at the ceiling, say a prayer for all these guys. Never worry whether I will get much sleep. All I really care is that I rise. That I rise.
Thank you. So we're on the stage of the Bedlam Theater here in Minneapolis. I'm Jeff Horwich. It's a story slam from In the Loop, and our theme tonight, Tightening the Belt. And with me now, Alan Staples. Alan, welcome back.
Thank you, Jeff.
Now, we haven't seen you at a story slam since maybe our very first one.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you back with us. So you've got a unique insight into our economy. You work at a high-end store.
Yes.
Name it if you like. No. What kind of
clothing and accessories?
High-end clothing accessory store. Yes. Okay. And has your clientele at the store changed at all as the economy?
Yeah, has, business has never been better, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Wonderful. Very busy. Lots of people buying lots of things.
Now, what kind of accessories are we talking about here?
Handbags, that sort of thing. Scarves, maybe cashmere things, things like that.
Do you grit your teeth as you stand behind the counter or walk the aisles?
I'm happy and delighted to help them.
Of course you are.
That's how I am.
And that pays the bills.
Yes,
and,
it does.
And gives you time to work on stories like the one you're going to share with us right now. Alan Staples, thanks a lot for being here.
I don't have a lot of money. I don't. Belt tightening to me is about as foreign as sunshine or breathing. Not that unusual. Yet when my girlfriend spent a year of study in Israel, I decided to quit my job and go with her. It's only money, after all, and what's money in comparison to love? So for 3 months, I wandered around the most hotly contested piece of real estate in the world, Jerusalem's Old City. And it's funny, because I'm not Jewish, I'm not really Christian, I'm not Muslim, yet here I was at the religious epicenter of what 3.4 billion people believe in. And yet for me, it was like attending a baseball game where you're not really a fan of either team. So when Victor, a 35-year-old Palestinian, offered to give me a tour of the Old City, I thought, why not? It'd be interesting to get his geopolitical take on the region and Hamas, and it was. But ultimately, what was most interesting was the universal topic of conversation among men, women. So, your girlfriend, is she in Jerusalem? Victor asked me as we made our way down Nablus Road in East Jerusalem, past bakeries and storefronts. Yeah, I said. She's a student. American? Yeah, I said. So, when are you getting married? Are you getting married? I don't know, I said, wondering why Victor now sounded like my mother. Because the Jews, he said, and paused. Uh-oh, I thought. Victor's about to ruin our pleasant afternoon by saying something anti-Semitic. The Jews, he said again, picking his words very carefully, usually only marry their own. Well, now, as far as blanketed statements of dubious accuracy goes, he's kind of right. There is a societal pressure on Jews to marry other Jews if we're going with blanket statements of dubious accuracy. Do you know her family? Victor asked, very concerned. Are they good people? Yeah, they're great. Once, Victor said, looking down, I was in love with an American Jew. She tell me she loved me, I tell her I love her, tell her I want to marry her, and she say to me, Victor, I love you too, and if you were Jewish, I would marry you, but I can't. And she leave. She break my heart. She is only woman to break my heart. He paused. Well, second girl to break my heart. There was girl from Belgium, but that is other story. So my worry subsides. Victor is not an anti-Semite. He's just a guy with a broken heart. And so that is why I do not like women, Victor says finally. But Victor, you're married. I marry so I do not have to deal with other women. I do not trust women. They are, and here he makes a dismissive wave of the hands. Okay, so, well, Victor is not an anti-Semite, but he may have a touch of misogyny to him. It's now time to figure out how much this tour was going to cost me. So, Victor, 400 shekels. Does that sound about fair? Usually, he said, for a tour like this, there is a small group of people. I usually am paid 2,000 shekels. But I like you, so let us say 1,600 shekels. 1,600 shekels is about $400. I like you too, so let's say 600 shekels. 1,000 shekels, Victor said. 600 shekels, I said, staying my ground. Okay, 900 shekels, Victor countered. And eventually, 800 shekels, or about $200, was the final price. And I knew this was too much. I knew he set the opening price ridiculously high, so even with the compromise, I'd be paying too much. But I didn't want to create any more of a scene. Thank you, he said, not counting the money, as he stuck the bills into the front pocket of his faded blue jeans. This is very kind of you. And I know I got ripped off. I know I did, but I felt okay about it. That $200 meant more to him than me anyways, but that's not why I felt okay. Victor didn't get to be with someone he loved, and I do get to be with someone I love. And if that difference comes with a $200 price tag, so be it. I mean, it is only money after all, and what is money in comparison to love?
Indeed. Alan Staples. Thanks, Alan.
This is the In the Loop Story Slam, Tightening the Belt, our theme tonight. And Vicky Joan Keck, welcome.
Hi.
Let me just say, you're looking lovely. It says here you've lost 25 pounds, speaking of tightening the belt, in the last 6 months.
Yes.
How have you done it?
Well, should I say the name of the program? But it's just an at-work kind of a program where you check in and weigh in once a week. And
just one of those.
Basically, I cheat a lot. I cheat a lot. I don't count all my calories or anything like that. I just think about it before I put it in my mouth, and I slowed down a lot, and I've exercised a lot more.
Oh, well, nice work.
Thank you.
You don't give me, I have no material here. I can't make fun of you at all.
So, sorry.
I better just go away and let you get on with your story. Vicky Joan Keck, welcome back to the Story Slam.
Thanks. I do like my job. I enjoy the work. My coworkers, it's fairly low stress, good hours, good benefits, but the pay is fairly mediocre, and it's getting harder and harder to make ends meet. I cut back wherever I can, and when my mechanic told me last February that Francis, my beloved 1997 Chevy Lumina, needed $1,500 worth of work done, I had to think about that long and hard. Did I really want to put that kind of money on my credit card, or should I just bite the bullet and get rid of that car? Now, I don't really need a car. I walk to work. I'm four blocks from light rail. I have access to several bus routes within like a block of my house. So in April, I got what I could for dear old Francis and joined up with one of those car sharing programs. for when I really need the wheels. For the most part, it's all good, but there is a learning curve when getting used to relying on the mass transit. Time management, that's a big one. It always takes 2 or 3 times longer than I think it will to get anywhere these days. I can't be spontaneous like I used to be, and I have a hard time giving up the independence that I used to have. I hate relying on anyone else for rides. Riding the bus, however, I am discovering is always an adventure. Sometimes it's pretty interesting, but other times I have those moments of quiet desperation. On one particular hot, sticky, crowded day on the bus, I wrote this slam, which I call my mass transportation lamentation. I am sitting at the station with frustration and trepidation that I am late to my destination. I need fortification to deal with the degradation of this kind of transportation where the air is just full of perspiration, and I have the inclination that half the population should be in some kind of incarceration when every exclamation is an expletive. Oy vey, I do a silent invocation for the salvation from this infiltration of abomination and intoxication. So please forgive my exasperation, but I'd love an explanation for your hesitation to understand my situation. In summation, I need a vacation.
With the requisite amount of gesticulation, that's Vicky Joan Keck. The In the Loop Story Slam is produced by Melissa LaCase with help from In the Loop's trusty producer, Sandin Totten. Minnesota Public Radio's director of live events is Tony Bull. Extra assistance tonight from Anna Wegel, Whitney Stark, Srini Radhakrishna, and photographer Jeremy Pavlek. Our engineers this evening, Sam Keenan and Cameron Wiley. Thanks to Marin Ward, John Cole, Emily Anderson, and all the great staff at the Bedlam Theater here in Minneapolis. Thanks to the housing downturn. It has not been turned into condominiums yet. Let's hope it stays that way. The smarts are Jimmy Kennedy, Joe Weissman, and Morris Engel back here. More about all of us at minnesotapublicradio.org. Just look for In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. We'll see you online, we'll see you on the radio, and at the next Story Slam. Good night, everybody. Hey everybody, this is Jeff again with a quick note. Later this month, we are bringing the Story Slam out into the bright sunshine of the Minnesota State Fair. Saturday, August 23rd is the date. It's the first Saturday of the fair this year from 11 to 1. And our theme for this one is going to be taking sides. Now we're going to need an audience, of course. The taping is a free event at the MPR booth. And if you want to tell a story, we'd love for you to sign up ahead of time at our website. Just visit minnesotapublicradio.org and we'll make the sign-up form very easy to find on the In the Loop homepage. See you at the fair.